Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We got Mike Florio coming your way at 10, Ian Happ at 10:20, Midday Midway 10:40, Mark Lazarus at 11, and surprises along the way as well. Layla Rahimi is here today because it's Wednesday and we are in studio and this is what we do. 312-644-6767. That's the phone number at WSCR The Score. You want to email us, you email Bernstein at 670thescore.com. That's where you go to listen to us live because we stream at 670thescore.com. Send a text to the text zone, as many of you do so often. Brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. You text the number you call, 312-644-6767. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein670. My personal feed is at Dan_Bernstein. Hers is at Layla Rahimi. Download the radio.com app to stream The Score on your mobile devices. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Our Twitch stream is up and running. It's nothing like the Among Us feed last night that was setting records. But if you want to get a look at these cameras, the good ones, the high-def cameras here in studio, you go to twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Brian Gerch directs that feed and moderates the chat that is alongside. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer, and Ray Diaz, the young, handsome executioner, is the man on the board doing what he does. So now you've gone and done it again. You're trying to raise my panic level. I've had this. I've processed this. I continue to be reassured that it is extremely unlikely that the White Sox will hire 92-year-old Tony La Russa to manage this team at this time. It's just, it is too wrong to actually happen.
Psychology 101 with Dan Bernstein is brought to you by Wednesday. You really think it's that simple? Do you really think it's just, I have come to terms with this information? Here's my problem with this, is Ron Washington is available and we will not get into
that. Now we got a whole other psychological problem here for you.
Oh, God love him. I do. I really do. However, that base running error where he's at third probably cost the Braves the trip to the World Series, did it not? But Wash is available. Wash has World Series experience. I can't say it without freaking out.
He does. Relatively okay. Recent World Series experience by the letter of the law.
I can't say it without freaking out still. It's been 9 years. At some point, I'm going to get over this. Okay, so Wash has World Series experience. I'm not being dramatic. Okay, and Sandy Alomar has, I think, just a really good resume now and proof that he's doing the job at all levels. And they have not been brought up in this carousel of managerial White Sox decisions. And I know everybody is freaking out about this in some way, shape, or form. You either hate that we're talking about it, you hate that it's being discussed seriously. But at the end of the day, we have to go with the facts. And the facts are Tony La Russa is the only person so far who's interviewed for this job, which is why I'm starting to get a little issue with this.
I know. I went through this with Jim Boylan. I went through this with every day that Jim Boylan remained unfired.
And you're like, it's cool. Like, this isn't forever. But it just kept going now, didn't it?
Everybody kept telling me they know smart people will make right decisions. They're not stupid. They're not going to have Jim Boylan as their coach.
Do you like Jim Boylan?
No. And it's one of the few things I can do where in this world where everything is awful and every next bit of information is worse than the last bit of information, that the only thing that I can still look to that little flame that burns brightly in my heart is that Jim Boylan remains fired. And I always have that to think about.
That's the things he can work on as a person and as a coach.
That's my happy place. This segment is brought to you by Toro Snowblowers. For grizzly winters, you need a Toro Power Max snow blower. It's a beast on snow. Act now. Get up to $100 off on select Toro Power Max snow blowers. See your Toro retailer now. Win winter with a Toro. Let's hear it from the Scores baseball reporter, shall we? That just this morning, this was, you know, David Hall was and Mully were asking Bruce Levine, just to confirm that indeed the White Sox are talking and or have talked to Tony La Russa.
From my understanding, yes, they have. And they, meaning Rick Hahn and likely Kenny Williams. Rick Hahn, you know, the general manager. Kenny Williams, the executive vice president. So this is, from what I'm told, they have. And, you know, the interest seems to be there on both sides. Now, as to protocol, Major League Baseball, you must interview other people, okay? And you must interview other minorities. I guess you would consider Tony La Russa being a minority, but that's not going to be enough. I think there's other people that they have or will interview. And obviously, during the World Series, Major League Baseball does not allow you to announce a manager. So this process will probably go after October 28th. And if it is indeed after October 28th, I think it'll be soon after that. I think the White Sox probably have in mind what they want to do. And La Russa being asked or saying yes. So those are the two final situations that you would have to wait for here.
Rewind for a second here.
I guess you would consider Tony La Russa being a minority, but that's not going to be enough.
Is crazy old coot a protected minority? Like, is that, do you, must you say, well, you know, we haven't interviewed a gibbering old coot yet.
I guess you would consider Tony La Russa being a minority, but that's not going to be enough.
Huh? They consider him a minority?
Based on age, I guess? Because what else would
we looked into it. We intended to throw the ball through in there. If he ducks it, fine, then we stop doing it. But just look at the location and the potential danger of the two of them. Just think about that for a second.
I guess you would consider Tony La Russa being a minority, but that's not going to be enough.
That derailed me. I'm not going to lie. Just totally derailed me.
But now the only thing I could possibly think of, you ever see the movie True Romance?
No.
No?
I'm not
you
a
haven't
movie
seen
watcher.
True Romance?
I watch a lot of sports and stuff.
Oh, come on.
TV shows occasionally.
It's written by Quentin Tarantino.
Okay.
And everybody is in it.
Oh.
Every actor you think is good is in it. And there is a scene in which Dennis Hopper, who realizes he is about to be whacked by the mob boss played by Christopher Walken, whose henchman James Gandolfini is standing right behind him.
Oh, weird. James Gandolfini's the henchman?
Oh, a heavy in this movie. A menacing, menacing heavy.
James has had a family material, but you've got me now.
He is really, really deranged and nasty in this movie. And Dennis Hopper realizes, and there's a symbolic moment where he asks for the cigarette that was offered that he had turned down, and it's a symbol of him recognizing that these are the last moments of his life. And he takes the time, and you can hear Tarantino's typewriter clicking. You can hear it as the dialogue is being said, but it is a very specific, particular description of Christopher Walken's character's Sicilian roots and the history of the island and the Moors and the Moorish invasions of Sicily. And that's as far as I can go with that particular monologue. But that would be the furthest you could go to say Tony La Russa is in any way somehow connected to a minority. But, hey, it's fun to think about, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I guess we're just trying to reach for whatever situation we can when it comes to making sense out of his hiring, other than the obvious connection being that Hawk fired him 35 years ago. Right?
It's so...
I feel like that's what we're trying to, that's what this is about. is ultimately we're trying to legitimize the idea of this because he's the only candidate the White Sox have interviewed so far. And a lot of times the first candidate is who they really want in these searches, not the White Sox in particular, but teams.
Yeah, that's the primacy versus recency effect. And I never have tried to look too hard into who interviews when.
Yeah, I mean...
Especially the Russ Grimm Bears interview. I don't know. You were not here when Russ Grimm interviewed for the Bears head coaching job.
I was not.
And he thanked the McClaskey family and was there in his Sunday best sweater. Couldn't be bothered to put on a suit, and it was not a good look. But that was the old courtesy interview there for Russ Grimm. But I'm not going to let you do this to me. I'm not going to let you make me revisit my fear.
That's fine. You can be independent of my thought process, but I'm telling you that I am where you are last week with this.
Get out of there. It's not fun. Don't be where I am anywhere and stuff. Then you start thinking like I think and you're miserable all the time.
But isn't that what happened? Like you hang out with somebody or you work with them and then like you pick up things. Isn't that right?
Like yeah, you start talking like them.
Yeah, you start to wear matching clothes. That used to happen to me a lot with Luke Stuckmeyer when we did
what?
Shows. Yeah, we would naturally start wearing the same colors on the same days. And I'm like, this is getting weird.
And like husbands and wives start to look alike,
yeah,
they say.
Yeah, but yeah. So I think this is just, it's going to happen. But I am where you are at with this last week.
Okay, let's see where we are with this bizarre Blackhawks story. Can we get into this? Can we peel this onion from what came out yesterday? Because there's so many layers to this that I genuinely don't know. I want to have Jay Zawoski pop on as well with his expertise and some of his knowledge because there are so many levels of this Blackhawks roadshow that got rolled out.
Yeah, and I think the reason that we talk about it so much, not to get inside baseball, but to us who are familiar with the Blackhawks media tactics,
yep,
this is why it's so interesting. It's not the fact that they didn't say a ton, but it's just the fact that it happened and how. And to us, the action signifies there is a change.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Glenview Luxury Imports. The North Shore's newest Alfa Romeo and Maserati dealership has arrived. Visit gliglenview.com. They've got it. We'll figure out what the Blackhawks are up to next on The Score.
The goal is to try to be more transparent with the fans and the media and to, I guess, pull the curtain back a little bit to maybe provide some more information on the direction that we're heading, really that we've been heading in. But also to clarify, if there is any uncertainty or confusion, we don't want that. We want to do a better job of being more transparent with yourself as well as the fans, because ultimately, I think that will get everyone in a better place.
That's Stan Bowman, part of the Stan Bowman Traveling Roadshow, where he's talking to everybody who wants to listen, and it sounds like... We're drawing a lot of conclusions here. We're trying to figure out from what we're hearing that seems just so out of character, at least under a John McDonough-controlled organization that never let any information out about anything and everything was so guarded, to all of a sudden say, we're being transparent. The announcement of transparency, to me, just from a reporter's perspective, I always have to look askance at that. Like, why are you telling me that you are being transparent?
Well, or maybe it wasn't out of character. It was just out of practice.
Could be.
Like, this is the character, and previously it was not because of practice.
And some of this, too, is explaining why they're making certain moves. He used the word rebuild, and you don't do this and invoke that word without understanding its power. And what it means, retool, rebuild, and any euphemisms that are used right here. But the problem is, as long as you have Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, you're not rebuilding.
And you can't move them.
You can if they give you permission.
Right, but you can't do it on your own.
But that's not a rebuild.
I didn't think so either. Like, you trade Chris Sale, that's a rebuild. You have to have a new quarterback early in the draft. That's a rebuild. You know, there's, we know when a rebuild is a rebuild.
Then you say, we'll develop our young players, but we have to sign a bunch of late 20s veterans to give everybody a chance to win. It all seems so in between. And I don't know that I got a satisfactory explanation of really what the plan is, because it's not a rebuild.
Yeah, and Bowman talked about how he said because of the cap in the NHL, you can't really rebuild. But to that argument, I think a lot of hockey fans would counter with the Pittsburgh Penguins as an example that you can. And I talked about that before the show with Jay Zawoski when we were trying to make sense of all this.
Yeah, I went back before this segment and sort of checked back on some of the things Sam Bowman said. And he keeps going back to the term rebuilding the depth instead of saying an actual rebuild, because you're right. You can't rebuild this team without trading Taves, Kane, Keith, and Seabrook. I think it's impossible to trade Seabrook. There's no way they're going to be able to do that. No one wants a well-declined, expensive 4 years left on a deal defenseman. The other three, you can make an argument, could help another team. But until those guys are traded, you can't call it a rebuild. Look, the thing is, what he's saying, growing your talent, the prospects you have, developing them well, bringing in young NHL talent, so 25-year-old defenseman, I guess, would qualify as that, and then help and building the depth that way, that makes some sense. But when you look at some of the moves he's made, even this offseason, it doesn't really reflect that. And that's where I think the disconnect is with a lot of people.
Part of the explanation of the Brandon Saad trade may give us a window into his thinking here. So let's hear it from Stan Bowman himself, because he was on the Laz and Powers podcast on The Athletic. And Mark Lazarus, who's going to join us at 11 o'clock, by the way, and we'll get his direct thoughts on all of this. He sort of pressed Bowman on that decision to move Saad to the Avalanche.
How do you square the idea of this, everything you just said with the Saad trade, where you went and you acquired a veteran, Nikita Zadorov? He's 25. He's been in the league a while. He's a veteran. You didn't really save any money on the deal, and you didn't get a pick, and you didn't really get any significant prospect out of it. How does that trade, was there just no market for Saad at all? Would you have been able to hold on to him till the deadline and see if you could have gotten a first or a second round pick out of him? How did the Saad trade develop, and what was the thinking behind it?
Sure. I'll explain that in detail. So Brandon was in the last year of his contract. He'd be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the contract. So with where he's at, $6 million, that was not a player that we were going to continue on after this year. We're trying to get more flexibility. We're trying to get younger players. So for me, 25-year-old defenseman is young. I guess you have a different take on that, but he's, most players really come into their own as defensemen between 23 and 30. That's kind of the prime age for a defenseman. For me, 25-year-old defenseman is not old by any means. He's got more years ahead. It's not like he's a UFA after one season. He's a player that has much more road ahead of him. The benefit for us is we've got two young, right-handed, skilled, smaller defensemen that have offensive ability in Ian Mitchell and Adam Boqvist. And we think that by bringing Nikita in, we're going to help accelerate their progression and their growth to make a bigger impact on our team. The draft pick route, it's a longer game. Those players are, you're going to draft the player in 2021. They'll probably help you 2023, 2024. And, like I said, we have some really good pieces right now. We don't have enough of them. So to me, it's not like the only way to approach it is to get a draft pick. There's inherent risk to keeping a player and assuming that you'll trade him at the deadline for a draft pick. Players get injured. It happens every year. Players' performance can wax and wane. There's no guarantee that just because you think you're going to get value X at next year's trade deadline may or may not come to be.
It's still, yet again, it's in between. This remains tremendously in between about either commit to this or don't. And I know his hands are tied because of the no movement clauses.
Uh-huh.
I know his hands are tied.
That he gave.
Yes. And he sounds like what this was is I guess for lack of a bigger vision from somebody higher up in the organization. And I guess Danny Wirtz is the only guy right now who's like the interim president. But until they hire a top hockey executive that has someone above the title of general manager, this in-between vision is done to reset expectations. Like when you have Taves at $10 million and Kane at 10 million, you should be a playoff team. But are they sort of explaining to you why they're not going to be?
That's how it sounds to me. And look, you had a team that, if you compare the team last year to the team it is now, maybe you could say they're about as good, except for the fact that you had two all-star goalies for the bulk of the season, and even that wasn't enough to secure you a legitimate playoff spot. It took a pandemic and four extra slots per conference to get into the final spot of the playoffs. So how you see that happening next year with three unproven goalies vying for the net, it just doesn't compute to me. And maybe you can say that trading Brandon Saad away and adding Matthias Janmark and Lucas Walmark and Nikita Zadorov for that money makes you a deeper team. That's probably true, but I don't know if they're any better. So it feels like they're just sort of stuck in this neutral zone of the 17th overall pick, the 15th overall pick, somewhere in there where you're going to get a nice player, but not someone who's going to change your organization. And he's right that they have a good young core of talent. Doc is 19, DeBrincat's 22, Strome is 23, Boqvist is 20. But where is the next Taves? Where is the next Kane? Where's the next Keith coming from? You're not going to get a franchise player picking in the middle of the draft year after year after year. And I think that's the disconnect. If you're going to rebuild, you should just sort of tank it. And even if you want to keep the core around, you can still tank and keep the core around.
Yeah, but they'll be miserable. Or maybe the tanking will have them rethinking their no movement clauses.
Well,
maybe end up, you know, we're working against yourself in kind of a twisted way. Like, I don't want to be part of this. Get me out of here. But you got to commit to that.
That's like a breakup strategy that a lot of men use.
Right.
Okay, so let's go back to what was said. And I think I still am of the belief, Jay and Dan, that perhaps it was Jonathan Taves that predicated this in the comments that Taves said when he said, you know, bottom line is I want to win. The expectation for other leaders and myself is to come to camp ready to be a playoff team. I mean, I'm not surprised in the least that Jonathan Taves said this. Like, he doesn't prepare any different, period. But the fact that he said this comes as a shock because it's a completely different direction than what we expected indicates not everyone was on the same page. And even if that's the only reason all of this is happening, I'm okay with it because it's a clarification. But is it enough, I think, for fans? Is all of this enough? Is it enough for Taves and Seabrook and Kane and Keith? Who is this enough for, I guess, is my question.
Well, an important distinction to point out is Taves made those comments before the Hawks brought in those two free agents, Janmark and Walmark. And I know they're not household names, but they're respected, good veteran players that are going to help the team. So there's some context there, too. The other thing is, this is the first offseason that Stan Bowman has had without John McDonough lingering over his shoulder and influencing some hockey decisions, which, from what I understand, became a bigger problem as the Hawks started missing the playoffs. As he's, you know, McDonough doesn't want that, obviously. So he started getting more and more involved with the hockey operation side of things and sort of interfering. A lot of people think that he was a big part of the reason Boqvist was called up so early, and hopefully that early recall didn't stunt his development. Now this is all on Bowman. And what I like about the transparency, for whatever reason it happened, is now Stan Bowman's on record with every writer, every podcast in town, hopefully mine on Thursday, sat down for an hour with all these people and said, this is what we're going to do. So from here on out, every move he makes is going to be looked at with the microscope of what he's said over the last 2 days. And remember this, Dan, and Layla, we talked about this last night, so I didn't say her name. Remember the Bulls wanting to get younger and more athletic?
Yep.
That haunted them for years.
Well, when they went out and got Rajon Rondo and an old
and
D. Wade.
Wade.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I
so
yes.
every move they made was opposite of what they said they were going to do. So that comment stuck with them and haunted them for years. So if Stan Bowman, look, what Bowman is saying, we're going to add young depth while developing our guys. Fine, I'm down with that, but he's actually got to do it. He actually has to start doing it. If you're going to start trading for 25-year-old established NHL players, I get that. I'm down with that. You want to trade some vets for that? Cool. Let's do it. But you've got to actually do it.
You know what else they have to do, Jay? That in ever since the playoff ouster at the hands of the Predators. Get faster skaters. Yeah. You watch these other teams. You don't have to be a hockey expert. And I'm the furthest thing from a hockey expert. But I know sports. And I know fast guys are better than slow guys. And say everything you want about Olli Maatta and how responsible he is or anything else. Slow. So many other teams have young, fast skaters. They're beyond you. They went by you.
But we did want to get younger, and we do want to get more athletic.
Get faster. However you got to do it, get faster.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the hope is that, well, we know Adam Boqvist is fast. When he starts to play at the level he's expected to play, he's going to look like a different guy than he did last year. He's 19. He's 20 years old. That's tough for a defenseman to come in that young. Ian Mitchell is older than that. He's played through college. He's sort of ready to go. Bowman said he would have made the team last year. He's got some speed. So there is some speed coming through the system. But, yeah, Olli Maatta, like, right. That's just, that might be the slowest skater in hockey that they brought in last season. And he was okay, but, and Zadorov isn't fast. He's big and he's physical, but he's not fast. That's the thing. If you're not going to be a big physical team like Winnipeg, like St. Louis, you've got to be fast. That's how the Hawks were winning cups. Was they were just faster and more skilled than everybody. Right now, they're neither. They're neither fast nor physical. So, again, we're stuck in the middle here with this team.
Well, I'm glad we came to absolutely no conclusion.
We felt we need to start getting younger and more athletic.
Despite as hard as we've worked to figure that out.
And we didn't even talk about the goalie concern, which to me, if you're gonna cheat a little bit in other areas, you need an established goalie, and that's out the window now.
They don't seem to know who that's going to be. The top of the hour is brought to you by Glenview Luxury Imports. The North Shore's newest Alfa Romeo and Maserati dealership has arrived. Visit GLIGlenview.com. They've got it. Mike Florio with all kinds of NFL stuff is next. Layla Rahimi with me today on The Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.